Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. I'm Steve Williamson. Sitting across from me is
Mike Cosentino.
And today we've got the studio filled with people,
jam packed with ladies.
Yeah. Well, you want to introduce them, Mike, or you want me to?
Well, you've gotten
everybody's name, or
As soon as you asked, but Harriet Young, who could forget?
Harriet Young is a professor up at NAU. She was the first vice chair of the Arizona Democratic Party, and she has, I think, just politics in her bones.
Right.
I was listening to a Tony Kushner interview, and he said politics is really an art form, and that it's where philosophy and theology and practicality all meet. So we have Harriet Young, we have Angela Lefevre, and Angela ran for the State House of Representatives. She didn't quite win. She came close. But
and has been on our show several times.
Yeah, and been on our show several times. She's very active in Democratic politics, very active in all kinds of nonprofit activity. And then we have Karen McClellan, who's the current vice president of Democrats of the Red Rock.
And an education advocate.
And an education advocate, a strong education advocate who's been working on not only on the state level, she's gone to national meetings to advocate for education. She's a person who talks to congressional representatives, who talks to state representatives about the educational needs we have here.
Speaks truth to power, as we like to say around the revolutionary area.
So, Harriet, we're talking about ALEC again today. Tell us what ALEC is and how it got going.
When you think about legislatures and legislatures around the country, you generally think about Congress, and you don't necessarily focus on every state has a legislature, and they've flown under the radar as something that the public pays attention to, and they're uninformed the public about the general powers of the legislatures. But ALEC was formed by a group of very sophisticated old-line politicians who realized that legislators in the state legislatures determine things like voting laws for each and every state. This is how the South was able to disenfranchise people for hundreds of years. They realized that the states determine what the congressional and the legislative districts will be, and that's very important when you're talking about redistricting. This is how you gerrymander to get people you want elected, by putting people who oppose you in districts where they never can win. These are very, very important institutional powers.
So the innovation, ALEC is a lobbying group.
Correct.
It lobbies for right-wing and corporate interests, but they don't focus on the national government.
Well,
they focus on the 50 state governments, and they is that the innovation?
Absolutely.
And when does it start?
1973. The realization was, in order to turn back the great liberal movements of the 60s and 70s, huge triumphs, civil rights, women's rights, gay rights, consumerism, and environmental laws were all passed in the late 60s and early 70s. Nixon signed most of it. So the old line Republicans, many of them are familiar names, people who worked with the Barry Goldwater campaign, people who opposed FDR as far back as the New Deal. These are old line right wings family fortunes, primarily at this stage of the game. Companies that were owned by families that felt that labor unions were a threat. We take care of our people. We don't need unions. But all of these people came to the realization that you could take over state legislatures more easily than you could take over Congress, and you could get a lot further by taking over state legislatures.
And you could do it under the radar.
And you do it under the radar. And this is ALEC. It's American Legislative Exchange Council.
How does it work?
It works by getting funding, and I can go through who funds it, but it's major corporations and these old-line families. Richard Mellon Scaife's family, the Olin Foundation, the Bradley Foundation, Johnson & Johnson is a great... These are old Kohler, the plumbing people. These are old-line American families who resented industrialization and corporatism. It's since brought in ExxonMobil, Walmart, huge corporations. So it collects money from people who are basically capitalist free market devotees. They're opposed to, quote, mass movements. They don't like unions. They don't like any group that organizes to oppose their interests as capitalists. They feel that they are the preservers of true democracy. The democracy gets curdled. It gets diverted into communism when people begin to vote for group benefits or community benefits.
How much do they trust voters if the voters vote for people like President Obama or Bill Clinton? FDR.
You're exactly right. They do not actually believe that our government should be or is founded on popular voting, on democracy as we know it. That what we think as average Americans is the people vote. And if they vote for people who want to expand Medicare, or if they want to give better benefits to Social Security
or regulate the financial industry,
these are populist communist ideas, and it is the job of corporations and organizations like ALEC to veto, to stand between market, free market capitalism and what they call democratic voices. That the thing that's most important in our freedom, and that's their word, is freedom, is free market capitalism. Social welfare or pensions or better medical care, these are communistic ideas. We should all provide those by. So they set out to destroy public education as part of de-emphasizing the government's role in our lives, and they set out to destroy. Milton Friedman wrote it in his book. And he's the first one who said, we must end public education. The government has no business educating our children.
Before we get too much further, give us the nuts and bolts of how ALEC works. What happens when I go to an American Legislative Council?
I'm a legislature, a legislator. I'm a conservative, but I've been elected by some local people who have particular issues.
Right.
And I arrive at the State House, and I have almost no staff, right?
Right.
And what happens to the...
The nice thing is you don't have to think. All you have to do is get elected, show up, and ALEC is there to greet you. They will, particularly since you're conservative, they will give you their membership forms, which are very minimal, and then they invite you to their training sessions. They will invite you to their conventions. The nice thing, too, is you don't have to pay much to go. You get subsidized, and these are wonderful parties. There's lots of free food, free hotels, lots of entertainment. But when you sit down, you begin to sit down with corporate lobbyists, and you're divided into groups to study things like immigration, prisons, voter laws, labor unions, privatization of public education, health care reform, and anti-environmental protection and energy. Corporate interests, what corporations want. The religious groups tend to get involved in health care because they're really, really interested in women's private parts. And so their issues will tend to be abortion, reproduction, pills, that sort of thing.
Right.
But you can sign up for whatever group you want to. When you go to the convention, then you will sit down with corporate representatives and lobbyists, and you will write model legislation. These are wish lists for corporations and special interest groups. They will write the legislation with you, and you carry it home. And when every legislator walks into the office or into the legislative chambers, copies of these bills, these model bills, are put on your desk, and you don't have to bother writing them yourself. They're already written, and you just have to vote for them.
I'm going to throw you a little curve here. Aren't they presented with model legislation that's written by the corporation's lawyers, and then they fill in some of the blanks? In other words, they're not writing legislation in two or three days of...
They
get a model bill. This is how we first learned about ALEC, I guess, in the public realm. This is totally unknown to the average reader or person in Arizona or around.
The scary part.
They just don't know about ALEC. But there was a bill passed, and it was then put into the hopper and then published, and it still had ALEC's name across the top. This is American Legislative Exchange Council draft bill on, I don't know, it was the gun stand and defend law, but it was one of those that really hit the public
way. That much is true. I don't know.
I don't remember which one it was, but that's when the public first was introduced to what ALEC was. They forgot to erase that ALEC had written the bill.
Now, ALEC is right at home here in Arizona.
This is the number one state. We've got more legislators, more than half half of our legislators are members.
Let me. The numbers I got from I believe Common Cause was out of 60 senators in Arizona, 40 of them are members of ALEC. Out of 30, the other way around. Out of 60 senators, 40 are out of 30 in the House, 21 are members of ALEC.
There are more House members than senators.
Out of 60 House members, thank you.
That's the only problem.
I think the point's clear.
Yeah. 2/3.
So Angela, when you ran for office, were you planning to help Alex introduce some legislation, or did you have something else in mind? Title of Harriet's talk at Door was, and I don't have it right in front of me, was sort of like, the Arizona Alex exposed the Arizona legislature didn't become crazy all on its own. I had some help becoming crazy, and a lot of the help came from Alex. So what's happening in the legislature now?
Well, still as crazy, sorry to report. I've been down there and spoken to some of our representatives. It's a lot of concern, and much of it is still because of ALEC-type legislation. I just wanted to add one thing, which I think a lot of people don't realize is, you know, people are against, like, Citizens United, because they see that as a way that corporations now can give as much money as they want to elections. And a lot of people don't realize that every day this is happening, though. These corporations are literally taking over our state legislature. So that makes me very, very concerned.
And they're introducing hundreds of bills.
And they're introducing hundreds of bills. And as we've just said, Harriet just mentioned, is that, you know, and Mike, is that Arizona seems to be the number one place, probably because there are more right-wing state legislators who seem to not have a problem with introducing these bills. One thing that's bothered me this year, obviously women's issues have bothered me in the past. They've been curiously quiet, probably because they did so much damage last year. They haven't really got much more to do. So they've gone in other areas. And one of the things that really worries me is voter suppression. And curiously enough, it goes hand in hand with, you know, a general move towards what might be in some sometime in the near future, a blue Arizona. And, you know, Republicans are really frightened. So how can they do this? How can they start? The way to stop this is by stopping voters voting, those voters who possibly could vote against their wishes. And that's why we've seen legislation. Michelle Reagan's been responsible for a vast majority of it in the name of stopping
voter fraud,
thank you, which does not exist. I think we have maybe 5 or 6 cases of voter fraud. They really tried to find some and they couldn't. So in the name of voter fraud, they're trying to stop things like early voting, where voters have the chance of voting, voting early, passing on their ballots to somebody. I was reading today, an Arizona senior, 17 years old, magna cum laude, she's top of her class, has been out there last year trying to help people vote by picking up sealed and signed permanent early voting sheets from people who do early voting. Okay. If she were to do that in the next election, if this bill goes through, she will be she'll be committing a crime, a federal crime. She could be put in prison.
So when a voter, say an elderly voter or a young voter, asks a Democratic organization or a Republican organization to carry their ballot in for them, that would become illegal.
Yes. Yeah, it would be. It will literally be a crime if you do that.
Now, why would you care about that if there really isn't any voter fraud? What would be your motive?
What happened this past year was that there were literally tens of thousands of people were actually registered to vote. Many of them Hispanic. All of them citizens, okay, but it was felt that, hey, these people are citizens, they should have a part and parcel, participate, and that's what a lot of these groups did in places like Maricopa County, often in reaction to what was happening down there as far as 1070 and so on. So a lot of these people voted, and yes, SB 1070.
Is a perfect example of model ALEC legislation.
Absolutely.
It was written by some guy in Kansas.
And
Kansas.
One of the most, you know, most notorious.
But what, let me ask all three of you about public education, because Alex is active in trying to undercut public education, right?
Milton Friedman wrote the book in the 1950s that you must stop all public expenditures for what we call public good, and public education is our number one product. I mean, people come from all the world to go to American public schools, and he attacked that as the beginnings of too much public power, meaning government power. Milton Friedman said the way to destroy, and he used the word destroy, public education is by bringing up the idea of vouchers and charter schools. And he said when we sell people on the idea that they ought to be able to take their money anywhere they want it for education, that the public schools will begin to fail, that when we defund them, we will have destroyed public unions and public schools. And that's Milton Friedman, economist, University of Chicago.
And Arizona right now has probably the greatest number of laws promoting school choice. And vouchers, charter schools, variety of different things. But still, even in Arizona, 90% of the students attend public schools. So even in a state that has already provided all these options, it's not a popular option among parents. They attend the local public school.
It has sort of scandalous things where people in the legislature organize phony scholarship systems.
The student tuition organizations. Mr. Yarborough is a legislator. He wrote the law that said corporations can donate to student tuition organizations. Those who run them can take a 10% administrative fee and pass the rest of the money on to schools of their choice.
It's a tax credit.
The corporations can give the money to a legislator, which is illegal in the state of Arizona, in the name of this STO. And that money is a pool of money out of which the legislator, named Yarborough, pays himself $100,000 a year to administer the STO. He wrote the legislation. He set up an STO. He takes his cut. He does very well. Thank you so much.
Karen, there's no law against this?
I mean, yeah. He writes the laws.
Oh, that's right.
Karen, when you go to talk to, I know that you talk to congressional representative, you talk to people in the state, Senate and representative. What do they tell you when you talk to them about public education? I know Angela's talked to them, too. You actually go down, you try to meet with them. Will they talk to you?
Oh, I've talked to a couple of our local legislators. They are all very much in favor of expanding Arizona's vouchers, which are called education savings accounts in Arizona. They have a little bit different name, so they don't realize what they are. They're all very much in favor of that. They vote for it, even though they realize that choice in Arizona is not equal across the state. If you're up here in rural Arizona, you don't have many choices beyond your local public school, so the option doesn't exist. But they vote for that because the majority of our legislators are from Phoenix and Tucson, and there, at least, there might be a private school your child could attend taking some voucher funds.
Why are they so against, all three of you, and Mike, too, because Mike was a teacher for many, many years, very popular teacher down in Cottonwood. Why do they hate public education so much? Why is there this vast organization that's now been sort of exposed? And why the hatred for public education?
It's ideology. I mentioned Milton Friedman because he is the proponent of free market economy. No regulation, no taxation. That it is the free market that preserves freedom for the rest of us. They are utterly opposed as communism, public goods.
And on top of that, I think it's an ideology as far as which comes on the far right. And it's this concept of, you know, you should be responsible for your own children's education. Why should the public as a whole be responsible and have to pay for it out of taxes? And so therefore, why don't you go and teach your kid at home? I mean, why not, you know? Or if you want to, pay for your own education and you get what you pay for. But the concept of the whole, taking care of just maybe a part, is something that they don't understand.
So when you talk to them, they really don't have this idea of we're all in this country together and our descendants are in this country together and our forebears were all in this country together and we kind of sink and swim together, right?
There's that, and there's also some other ideological reasons. Arizona 2 years ago adopted Common Core education standards, which will be fully introduced next year. That's a multi-state idea, which is not from the federal government. It's created by the Governors Association and the individual states. But one of its basic ideas is students should learn to think critically. They should learn more than just memorizing facts and figures or how to solve a quadratic equation. And there actually have been other states, Arizona is not one of them, that have actually specifically stated that critical thinking should not be the end product of public education. The Republican platform in Texas last year had a statement to that effect. So there's this other underlying feeling that's coming up. We're trying to teach students to be able to think critically, which means we're going to teach them to question what they hear.
So privatizing education. Now, when did we vote for this?
That's my eternal rhetorical question. When did the public in Arizona stand up and say, we demand that we end public education?
We want vouchers.
We want vouchers. We want all these strange little schools.
I missed that vote.
And have to sit down and look at 42 different brochures from all these different, you know, private schools and religious schools and decide which one is going to suit my child, rather than send it around the corner to the neighborhood school, which is what we've all done, always.
And I think, you know, from someone who ran for the state legislature last year, you know, you spend months and months campaigning, talking to people in your constituency, and I know that's what my opponents did too. And then to kind of have this idea of you go there to the state legislature and you do exactly the opposite.
Right. Yes. You do what your
what you're told to do.
Your group's ideology dictates.
Absolutely. Where's that coming from?
Privatizing prisons. That's another. Did I miss that vote too?
It's another part of do not support anything that is called a public good. We've always thought the justice system, as we call it, I don't know if it's a good term or not, but the part of the justice system is the penal system. That if people are found guilty and sent away to jail, that it is a public duty to house criminals, treat them humanely, and hopefully rehabilitate them. You don't want recycling. But it's also a way to make money if you let corporations build the prisons and you simply pay them to house these people. They don't care about anything except the rent rate. They just want full rooms all the time so Arpaio can go out and, you know, round people up and keep the jails filled. It's like a cashier system.
In fact, the state guarantees a certain occupancy of the prisons, which they have to pay for the prisoners if they don't have enough prisoners.
Actually, when you look at it, the state spends more on private prisons and prisons as a whole than it does on education. That's a fact.
Well, this number is a few years old, but it used to cost between $15,000 and $20,000 a year to house a prisoner, and we spend $4,000 a year per student. There's no comparison, but they've gotten that number down quite a bit, that prison number down, at least closer to the
15,000. They're now feeding them two meals a day is one of the things I think they're doing as a cost saver is feed them less. And they're also, what we have ignored is that there's now prison labor. We used to not want to buy Chinese goods because they used prison labor in China to produce cheap goods. Around the United States where you have these private prisons, you need to look into what these prisoners are doing. They are manufacturing goods for corporations in the United States. We have, just like the Chinese, a prison labor system.
Wow.
And I think following up on this, there's an interesting link between bad education systems and prisons. Mm-hmm. And this is our problem here in Arizona, and it's terrifying, is that, you know, kids, they don't get a good education, they drop out of school, whatever. Where are they going to end up? You know, I used to work with junior probation. I've seen the kids. I know what happens. And it's a downward spiral. This is not good for Arizona, and it's not good for public education, not good for our kids.
Now, ALEC has a number of laws that seem to have fueled the war on women. Is that Harriet? We have.
I'm going to quote Brenda Barton. She said, she does not want to have public funds subsidizing private decisions. And I think the private decisions she's talking about are the decisions women might make, either to take birth control pills or to have an abortion if they wish, or if they have a medical necessity for an abortion, that she considers those private decisions, which she does not wish to subsidize with public funds. you don't know where she would draw the line, and I don't either, but she's found a place to take her stand. Now, she is our House representative, and we need to remember that she thinks these are private decisions we should pay for ourselves, and then outlaw because she doesn't like them.
And then tied with this, I think, is the state legislatures' attack on Planned Parenthood, which has got everything to do with, you know, women's issues, family issues, which used to even to the extent of trying to say, if you want to donate money to Planned Parenthood, you know, you can't use it as a tax credit. That's the kind of horrible kind of things that they've been doing here with women's health issues.
And most of Planned Parenthood spending, most of their activities has nothing to do with abortion at all, right?
Absolutely.
It's all women's health.
Yeah.
And out on the reservation, I live 5 miles from the Navajo Nation reservation. They have very, very large distances to go to find good health care. They have to travel. They have to plan. They have to find a place to stay. And so if they shut down Planned Parenthood's up where I am, which they've done, right, it's a day's trip maybe down and a day's trip back, and that costs money. And that impacts the poorest people in the country, the very poorest people in the country. So why are we warring on women, much less poor women, who have very few resources and making their lives extra difficult? What gives anyone the right to make that kind of decision?
Well, I think there's the corporate issues that Alex represents, and then there are religious fundamentalist beliefs that they would like to insert into our laws and have us all follow, whether we believe them or not, right?
Right.
I mean, part of it is a combination of, I mean, if I understand Alex correctly, it's huge amounts of corporate money, unsophisticated state legislators, conservative bent. They're writing the laws for them. They're introducing it. And you mix that in with traditionally very, very far right-wingers. When we're talking about these people, we're talking about John Birchers. I mean, the tradition, the money originally, right, Harriet, comes from groups that are people who were members of the John Birch Society who thought Eisenhower was a communist. I mean, really, this is where the original money came from to get Alex going, right?
And this gets to the question you keep coming up with, which is, what's wrong with public schools? What's wrong with publicly funded prisons? It's all considered communism to a Bircher. A Bircher doesn't want to see government do anything because in their own head, if it's government, it's bad. If it's bad, it's communism. So they have equated anything that we might consider the public good or the public interest as simply communism coming at you in some indirect way, but we will end up communists.
Now, this is a Democratic perspective show paranoia here. We have Common Cause. We have the source for this. This is repeated. We're talking about Arizona here and the number of legislatures that belong to Alec, and yet this is repeated in all 50 legislators.
It's hidden in plain sight, right, Mike?
Yeah, exactly.
You go on the
exactly.
internet, and you can get all this information from research groups, Common Cause, People for the American Way. There's a website, Alex Exposed, which has done a massive amount of research. One of the problems, folks, is that we have very little money and therefore very little time, and they have these massive resources to kind of disguise what they're doing. And Harriet was saying earlier when we were talking with her that they don't fund, like the Koch brothers don't fund one group. They fund dozens of groups. And the groups act together and try to create a kind of a avalanche of support for something that nobody really cares about that much or even knows about.
One of the things we still have support here is by the Democrats of the Red Rocks
and Democrats of the Verde Valley. Angela, do you have a quick announcement? Women in Blue is going down to the Arizona legislature on April 2nd.
That's right. If anybody is interested in coming, this is what we've been talking about. Meet your legislature. Ask them these questions. And what we've been coming up with. Call me. You can get me on 399-0999. That's a number will get me. And we'll arrange some carpooling.
And you can be a guy and go down for this too. Male.
That's right.
You're welcome.
Ask your legislator whether he or she belongs to the American
You don't have to be a member of the Democratic Party. You have to wear a blue shirt. Is that the game?
Yeah. Well, you got to like the blues, I think.
And so if you're interested in that, contact Angela and her carpooling. And it's a lot of fun. Really, isn't it? Go down and have lunch and yell at the legislature. No, you don't yell at them.
No, we're
nice. Really nice to them. Thank you very much for being with us. Next week, we'll have Michael Austin back on again. Michael Austin talked, we had a really good talk with him about the Constitution and the Founding Fathers and stuff. It's much different than you've been led to believe. almost all the talk about the founding fathers think this. There was no consensus about practically any issues. And we'll have Michael Austin again.
Democrats of Verde Valley meets at Randall's Restaurant on Thursdays. We're meeting again on the 28th of March here, and we're going to talk about our survival.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.